Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Hey, you made it to Friday! And now you get to reward yourself with our Friday News Roundup. Today on CityCast Las Vegas, I'm here with contributor Andrew Corrali, creator of The List.Vegas, and co-host David Figler. And we're talking about the new details in the Summerlin law firm shooting, the monorail Will They Won't They, and why Spearmint Rhino is suing Peppermint Hippo. It's Friday, April 12th. I'm Sarah Lohman, and here's what Las Vegas is talking about. David, Andrew, hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. So I do have to bring it down because the first one we're talking about is a real bummer. I think probably everyone listening has heard about the shooting that happened in a law firm in Summerlin earlier this week. David, lawyer, could you explain something about what happened there? What are the new details coming out?
Well, it's become a complicated story in no small part coming from the inordinate amount of reporting on many related threads connected to the people involved and the circumstances. But I think it's best probably to start with the very straightforward part, which is that a man named Joe Houston killed another man named Dennis Prince and his new wife, Ashley Prince, during a deposition in a Summerlin law office before turning the gun on himself and committing suicide. So what's drawn so much coverage in both local and national media is that Joe Houston and Dennis Prince are both longtime attorneys in Las Vegas.
Right.
I was acquainted with both of them. And that this was a legal proceeding involving child custody between Joe Houston's son, Dylan, and his ex-wife, the just mentioned Ashley Prince. Where it gets super complicated is that each side in this custody dispute were legally represented by people with very strong emotional bonds to their clients.
We should mention that Dennis Prince was the lawyer representing his wife in this custody case.
Yes, and Dylan was represented by his dad, Joe.
Yeah, it's a mess.
And, you know, Dennis had just married Ashley and they had a new baby too. So this whole case goes back to 2021 and it's been widely reported that the issue over who should have majority or even sole custody of the kids between Dylan and Ashley was exceptionally acrimonious. And while lawyers often fight with each other in contested cases, I've been there too, the common wisdom is that no one should take it personally. And maybe the most consistent reporting of this story to date has been that everyone here took it beyond personal. How could they not? And now we have three dead bodies and a lot of chaos in the aftermath for the people involved, the folks who were in the offices nearby where this happened, and of course, all the children, three now in total, who no longer have a mother who's alive.
Yes, and some who also don't have a father too, right?
Oh, yes, and of course.
So a couple of the new details I know that came out, and you can confirm these that I'm on track here, is one, the grandfather who did the shooting and then committed suicide or died by suicide found out that his cancer had returned. And so there's this sense of that he had nothing to lose going into this. Also, the lawyer
all these
representing
threads.
His family. Mm-hmm. And then Ashley Prince had also requested a psychological review and drug test of her ex-husband and had already made it very well known she felt very unsafe. That's also stuff that's come up this week.
Yeah, also very common allegations, whether there was truth to it or not in these type of proceedings. I would also add it's also come out that there was an attempt to remove Dennis Prince because of his deep connection to this case from representing Ashley. She did have other lawyers as well, and the judge denied that. But the reasons for that have been put under seal, essentially.
Yeah.
And in fact, because of all the media attention, it appears as though the public record has been closed temporarily.
Yeah,
so that
of course.
No one's digging around in there anymore because I'll tell you, in these child custody matters, it is nasty. And this is, you know, to the nth degree in a way that no one could foresee, I think, but also just absolutely tragic.
Andrew, let me jump over to you. You know, you're much as an outsider on this as I am. David has a very, unfortunately, intimate perspective on this. You know, do you think that this shooting tells us something about the adversarial nature of family law and child custody cases?
Oh, yeah. It gets to the heart of it in the most, you know, sad, sordid, kind of Shakespearean manner. I mean, the relationships, the tight relationships, the volatility and the, you know, the heatedness that must have been, you know, going on behind the scenes, the acrimony, as David says. And I think the takeaway for me was I was baffled that it was even allowed to, you know, to have lawyers representing their own family members, representing their own spouses in cases, let alone, you know, family custody cases and divorce cases where things get really intense. And I didn't know that it was just up to the lawyers to kind of determine whether they felt there would be a conflict or not. And David probably knows much more the texture of that than I do. But I didn't know that the state bar didn't disallow that.
You think that they might in the future now, David?
I think there might be some deeper discussions, and I'm hoping that becomes more of a conversation as well as how child custody proceedings even go than what will inevitably be a discussion about having, you know, metal detectors at law offices. But this is child custody, right? And the prime directive of child custody cases is to only do what's in the best interest of the children. And unfortunately, because it's parties who now essentially hate each other, you get situations where, like this one, it really becomes sort of this scorched earth approach to getting those kids.
Yeah.
And it oftentimes, and this is said, and I'm not going to, you know, speculate about this particular case, who was right or who was wrong. That's beyond what we're here to do. But I will say that, you know, in general, these cases can very well devolve into proxy battles about who's the better person, who's going to make the other person suffer by taking away the kids or getting the kids. Like, really, these kids are used as pawns in some sort of weird power struggle between two people whose relationship is devolved.
It has the worst possible outcome.
We approach child custody in an adversary way. That's the system that we have built. Yeah. And maybe there is a better system out there that we need to explore.
You know, speaking maybe from a personal angle on that sort of adversarial nature, you know, I've not gone through child custody battle, luckily, you know, but there is an element to this case, too, that is about like the toxic masculinity, right? And there's a toxicity that leads a man to go murder his former partner and his family. That's not what happened here. But there's also the toxicity that leads often the man to reach that level of hatred, right? You know, I'm out here on these streets trying to date. And, you know what it's like, David. And if I hear someone refer to their ex as any variation of that bitch, I'm out.
Yeah.
Because that just tells me that one day I'm going to be that crazy bitch. And especially if that ex is the mother of their child. So it's this perception of that your masculinity, that society tells you your masculinity has been destroyed if your partner leaves you. It's that idea of possession or ownership. And, you know, there's obviously this feeling that there was a lot of animosity, that, you know, the ex-husband was saying things at home, and his dad got on board with this. And
an email, too.
It's in an email.
Yeah.
So according to Las Vegas Review-Journal's homicide tracker, there have been 31 homicides so far in the Valley that involve gunshots. So considering that there have already been 31 homicides with guns, why do you think that this particular case has captured so much local and even national attention?
I think there's a couple of reasons. One of which is, I think, maybe intuitive, is that because at least the lawyers are both high profile enough that there have been many stories involving their prior clients in the papers before, that the media is in a lot of ways familiar with them. They know them. So there is that kind of knowledge. Also, you know, their prominence in the community. It's unusual for people with professional degrees to be in these type of situations, I think, in a lot of ways. An office setting is another thing that we don't see a lot of murders in. And when we do, it is often something that we, you know, likened to a mass shooting, whether it happened at UNLV or something like that, that kind of professional space as opposed to on the street or in a retail shop or something like that. I hate to say there are probably other more systemically biased reasons why, you know, when wealthy people of a certain ilk commit crimes on each other. But then, you know, there are going to be all these like court documents for reporters to kind of pour through to see if they could come up with some interesting threads into it. I don't think that other homicides are less important, especially to the families impacted. But, you know, this does tend to stand out just because of those circumstances and the kind of people involved.
Andrew, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I track with what David said. I mean, again, the ferocity of emotion that is just like, you know, is a storm, you know, behind this tragedy is, you know, just gives it this tabloid presence that, you know, just makes it kind of luridly compelling. And also kind of, you know, related to what David said, the Summerlin factor.
Yeah.
I mean, Summerlin is seen as, you know, a sort of suburban bastion of security and safety that is, you know, seen to be untouched by gun violence and other, you know, problems that are associated with the unfortunate downsides of you know, urban life. So I think the Summerlin factor, you know, kind of adds a bit of shock to it, sadly, that is going to really propel the story. You're going to see, you know, countless datelines in 2020s and, you know, other style, you know, shows dissecting this for a long time to come.
You know, in closing, this is a real heartbreak. This is obviously not the best solution for these kids who are now without their parents or their mother. And we're just thinking of the whole family.
And it's ongoing. I mean, that's the thing, too, is that right after this happened, the other attorneys for Ashley filed an emergency motion to keep Dylan away from the kids, give sole custody to Ashley's sister, and accused him in no uncertain terms, without any evidence, of kind of like being in collusion with his dad, which no lessons learned. The acrimony continues, even in light of the tragedy.
Well, let's hope that something does come out right for this family.
Yeah.
So, slightly less depressing news.
Slightly.
Total whiplash.
The monorail drama that I am calling Drama Rail. Hey, does it hit?
Nice,
no.
Nice.
Okay, all right. So the monorail, will they, won't they, otherwise known as Drama Rail. What is going on, Andrew? Can you tell us?
Yeah, I'm going to try to unpack this. Is the monorail staying or is the monorail going?
Yeah.
Talk about a story flying off the rails.
Oh, boy.
So I'm going to try to...
Okay, that was
better. I like Drama Rail, though. Drama Rail, solid.
No, that was
so, yeah, I'm going to try to unpack this latest chapter in the saga of the Las Vegas monorail. It all started, this latest sort of chapter all started on April 5th. The gaming news website casino.org published a story with the headline, the very spicy headline, End of the Line for the Las Vegas Monorail.
It's good.
And it was kind of like an inferential piece that wondered about the murky future of the monorail. And it was based on a few solid pieces of factual information from which it drew this inference that the monorail isn't going to be around. And those three pieces of information were, one, that the fact that the Las Vegas monorail doesn't seem to be pursuing extensions to Mandalay Bay, Allegiant Stadium, a stop at the MSG Sphere. They don't seem to be in conversations about, you know, future transportation development in on the resort corridor and around there. Two, the fact that the monorail, which originally cost like $650 million to build, is really old. And the company that manufactured the trams, Bombardier, is out of the business. And so that makes, you know, upkeep and maintenance expensive and difficult. And number three, the fact that the LVCVA bought the monorail out of bankruptcy in 2020 for a mere $24 million in change. And in that purchase agreement, there was a proviso that basically set aside kind of like $11 million for dismantling it, you know, when it eventually kind of, you know, ran out of steam figuratively, in around like 2030. And so it's kind of understood that when the LVCVA spent that $24 million, they were basically kind of buying out the underlying, there was this underlying non-compete clause that said there can't be any other, you know, public transportation projects east of the Strip as long as the monorail lives, or something close to that. Hmm. And basically, the LVCVA was in talks with Elon Musk to develop the loop. And so they needed that non-compete clause to go away. And so, you know, maybe the LVCVA didn't buy the monorail for the monorail, but just bought it so they could pursue other public transportation
Tesla
projects,
tunnels.
Right? It was always known that the monorail had, you know, kind of like a limited shelf life. But the LVCVA and the Las Vegas monorail, you know, kind of clapped back. And you know, there are memes and tweets about the monorail shutting down. The Las Vegas monorail, you know, clapped back and said quite, you know, straightforwardly, the report that the Las Vegas monorail is winding down operations is 100% inaccurate. The monorail is operating very successfully, and the LVCVA
very successfully,
very successfully, and LVCVA has no plans to cease operations. And I think there was a bit of sort of constructive misunderstanding going on, because the casino.org story never said that the monorail is like winding down. It just said basically like the monorail doesn't look like it's a long-term priority for the LVCVA in the next, you know, 10 to 20 years, given all these factors.
They also like quoted county commissioners talking about the ultimate decommission of this project. So,
I'm glad we're not right about this. But like, so first of all, why would you need a monorail extension when you can take a Tesla tunnel to Mandalay Bay, which I hope everyone knows by now, I hate the Tesla tunnels.
Were you being sarcastic?
I hate the Tesla tunnels. Why wouldn't I want to get on a train as opposed to four people getting it out of a car?
Okay, thank you.
However.
Yeah. There are some wrinkles to this, you know, and I don't even know if the LVCVA knows what the future of the monorail is. So I don't think it's that they're like sort of like they're really reluctant to, you know, outright explicitly say, yes, there's a shelf life to the monorail, because there are some wrinkles. And actually, one commenter on the casino.org article pointed out that there are plenty of other manufacturers who have since, you know, come into play to produce, you know, parts, you know, monorail parts.
The New York City subway seems to be going on, and they are formerly Bombardier, like, trains
exactly.
as well. So, like, what's up?
Hell, I got a 3D printer. What do you need?
Yeah, exactly.
Now we're talking.
Yeah, so it's not a completely moribund transportation technology. Also, you know, Steve Hill, chief of the LVCVA, pointed out that ridership of the monorail has been up since the pandemic, up to like 6 million riders a year. So that's not too shabby.
People love public transportation. Let's throw to David. Like, why is the monorail so adamant about countering the claims that the monorail is going to be decommissioned? Why do you think?
It's the thin-skinned nature of any entity in this friggin' town. No one can take criticism. No one can answer something fully and transparently. And that's why we're here, Sarah and Andrew, ask those probing questions. Look, the LVCVA and its many machinations behind the scenes is an endless source of frustration for people who just want to know what's happening in your city and where the power lies and what the future holds, you know? And it's really difficult for the people on the ground, the planners and the business people and people seeking education for their kids to live in this ever-changing environment. And the monorail isn't not part of that conversation. When it came up, it was much derided. I appreciate that there are appreciations of it. God bless Eric Duran Valle, who came on our podcast and sang the praises to you, Sarah, of the monorail.
He taught me to love the monorail. I love the monorail.
Look,
I've ridden the monorail since because of Eric.
But it has always been a bit of a boondoggle and certainly not the touted alternative to public transportation that this city so desperately needs. And so I just throw my hands up with all this talk. The monorail pushing back is just so Vegas.
It's so funny.
And I think, you know, the insider view in terms of the locals' view of the monorail is much more, you know, sort of nuanced. I think another reason that they clap back so hard is because a statement like, the monorail is, you know, winding down. That could be perceived to, you know, undermine public confidence of tourists in Las Vegas transportation and public infrastructure. And so in a way that they were, you know, I think that the monorail, in as much as they are the LVCVA, were protecting the brand, you know, and they don't want tourists to see Las Vegas as a lot of insiders and locals do. And that is, you know, that we've got this sometimes laughably myopic leadership at every level whose planning philosophy is making stuff up as they go along, right?
Everyone has to be so, like, macho. I mean, it's toxic monorail. It's toxic monoreality.
No.
we need to workshop that.
Too hard. Yeah, too hard. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, we'll
try to make that fit.
So what do we lose if we lose the monorail, when we lose the monorail?
Well, I mean, I'm a fan of the monorail in terms of, like, the promise that it holds. And if it was, like, you know, done the right way and, you know, really invested in, you know, I think it would be cool to have, like, a modern, high-speed, low-impact public transportation option for the Strip that also, you know, can serve locals. So in as much as Vegas is a place of, you know, fantasy, I always like the monorail being there as a sort of, you know, potential future icon of what could be in terms of public transportation. So I guess that's what we would lose, which is maybe nothing.
I mean, it always should have been from the airport to downtown. It always should have gone down the middle of the Strip.
It still could.
It's
cost prohibitive. No, I mean, the amount of money per mile just doesn't, I think, make sense anymore. But look, there seems to be a message between the lines when you are looking at the various quotes from people like Steve Hill, from Commissioner Gibson, from others intimate with the plans that are still very secret from all of us, is that they are considering ways to repurpose these tracks. Mm-hmm. And I've said it before, and I will say it again, I will not be shocked if they all of a sudden start showing Teslas riding up above ground and below ground, because I guess in a lot of ways, when you said it, Andrew, that, like, the only reason, well,
wait,
a
cars
reason
above ground? Whoa, whoa, whoa. Cars go in tunnels,
no, above,
David.
Above. Like,
what?
Elevated Teslas.
So elevated and Tesla tracks.
When Andrew pointed out that the LVCVA, that one of the reasons why they decided to buy the monorail was to get rid of a non-compete to help Elon Musk.
Right.
What else would they be doing to help Elon? I mean, that's like, this guy has juice with Steve Hill. So what is happening? Nobody knows, but
so
look for Teslas in the sky, babies.
There you go.
Ride the monorail while you still can, everybody. You know, you could show your locals ID and you get, I think, a $5 round trip. It's well
Woo-hoo!
Worth it. And it's a great place to view the Sphere as well. Get on there.
Monorail, 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 monorail.
So in the last of our very Vegas news roundup, we have actually a lawsuit, Figler. The Spearmint Rhino is suing the Peppermint Hippo. So I was unfamiliar, but these are both adult entertainment clubs, I guess more commonly known as strip clubs, but they see themselves as they're very high end, right? And the owner of the Peppermint Hippo worked for several years at the Spearmint Rhino. The Spearmint Rhino has been around and is a chain that's been around since the late aughts. And then this employee went and started the Peppermint Hippo, which, similar vibe, different animal, different plant in the mint family. So the Spearmint Rhino says this is, you know, muddying our brand, and Peppermint Hippo has got to go. The owner of the Peppermint Hippo said the strip club war is on. He actually said this to Page Six, which isn't Page Six New York Post. So this is national news at this point. The strip club war is on. He said in a statement on Tuesday, "We won't let this ridiculous lawsuit discredit us. In the wild, hippos and rhinos coexist. Why not Vegas?" So, gentlemen.
This is a silly story, but I get it. I mean, it's about business interests. It's about business interests.
Okay, first question is, when is something a knockoff and when is something an homage? What do you think?
Well, it's a ripoff here. I mean, obviously.
You think so?
Look, I don't think a lot of people associate large land animals with naked ladies dancing. It was a weird innovation to become the rhino, the spearmint rhino. It could have been a million things. It could have been a...
Do you know where the name comes from in the first
place?
No,
I don't know. Maybe he was chewing some gum one day and was watching the Nature Channel and getting high and was like, you know what?
Spearmint rhino, baby.
Spearmint rhino. It could have been the juicy fruit giraffe. It could
now
have been a million things.
Now we're talking, David Figler.
But, you know... It's a ripoff here. I don't think it's an homage. I mean, maybe it's a little bit of an homage. I don't know. Those are interesting words. What do you think, Andrew?
Maybe a ripoff homage. But I guess, I mean, I'm fine with it being a ripoff. Clearly, he just, you know, changed, you know, two words and, you know, to kind of like rhyme with their brand or bite off of it or whatever. I guess my question to you, David, as a lawyer, I mean, but is this a ripoff sort of protected by free speech? Or do you think that this is like out of bounds?
Well, that's what's going to come down to is whether or not there's substantial confusion in the marketplace.
They are
and people
that's the
think
word.
That they're
yeah.
going to the spearmint rhino, but, you know, peppermint hippo, they must be related. I must be going to the same place that has established that brand in my mind that I want to go to.
Okay. Mm-hmm. See, when I hear peppermint hippo, I think, oh, these guys are not affiliated with spearmint rhino, but they're playing off the name. How clever. Not, oh, this must be a spinoff brand owned by the spearmint rhino. But that's just me.
Well, I mean, that's what the argument's all be about.
Yeah. Wow, I'm going to attend this court proceeding.
You might just made yourself a witness. You might have made yourself
exactly.
an expert.
So let's say we're going to open a business, fellas, the three of us, with our money.
Oh. With CityCast money or with our own money?
With our own money, our personal CityCast money. and I think for it to be successful, we should probably play homage slash knockoff an iconic Vegas business.
Slash ripoff.
So what would your knockoff be, David Figler?
Okay. So I thought about this because I knew this was going to be coming. there is a proposal that just got floated around last week that there was going to be sort of a Jewish-themed hotel. It was going to keep kosher and all this other stuff. Fine. They were going to call it the King David or something. Blah. Here's the deal. Call it Sukkah Sukkah. So Sukkah is a Jewish holiday. That takes place under a giant hut. It celebrates the harvest.
I'm from the Sephardic tradition. It's a long story, but I know it is Sukkot. So I was very
confused. Sukkot. Oh, we could call it Sukkah Sukkah. We could call it Sukkot Sukkot.
Great.
Either way, it's
friends.
A hotel casino with a Jewish theme. And all the little rides upstairs, and instead of clowns, it's everyone in festive Purim outfits.
Yeah.
It's a whole, like, go hard with the Jewish theme.
Or it's a different holiday.
There you go. So that's it's right next door. It's in the old Slots of Fun space.
The only gambling is dreidels.
Dreidels. And there'll be a game of dreidel. That you could wager on. Absolutely.
And a high spinner's room for the high limit dreidel playing.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
We're making money. We're making money.
I feel like David has renderings of this.
I do. I mean, just the bar mitzvah space alone.
I love it.
For the ballroom. Oh, actually, it'll be a bar mitzvah themed nightclub. So instead of bar mitzvahs kind of becoming nightclubs, it'll be a nightclub that's based on a bar mitzvah theme. Oh,
it just sells itself. Bar mitzvah.
I have to
bar mitzvah.
I didn't get the joke at first. It's a play on Circus, your favorite casino.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay,
was it that off?
Yeah.
I thought it was close.
Okay.
Instead of a giant circus tent, it's a giant hut.
I mean, we know that they're building the Jewish casino, whatever that means here. So, like, pitch it, David. Pitch it. It's going to be great.
I got it. But they got to have that name so that people go there.
All right, Andrew, what do you think?
Well, in tribute to the Peppermint Hippo, I've actually developed a whole imaginary empire of adult knockoff Las Vegas businesses for tourists who want to explore the real, fake, ripoff Sin City.
Yes.
So first, they'll wake up and fuel up at my new breakfast strip club, Griddle Darlings. after they're all fueled up, they'll spend the day gambling. They'll be gambling with their sexual health at my adult resort, the Sex Caliber. And then... For a decadent and domineering dessert, they'll whip up some fun at my other adult resort, the MGM BDSM Grand.
Now?
No? All right.
Griddle Darlings.
Griddle Darlings doesn't get much better. You really led with your best hit.
I do like the MGM BDSM.
MGM BDSM just sounds like a great punk song.
Oh my God,
so
Griddle Darlings.
I might just reform the band for that one.
What is the billboard at Griddle Darlings advertising every morning?
Yeah, I don't know, something breakfast? Over easy.
Yeah, not our eggs aren't the only thing over easy.
Yeah, there it is.
My God. I mean, but then you start like getting into ovary territory. I mean, I don't think anybody at a strip club wants to think about women being filled with eggs, which we are. So I don't know. Is that my own take? I don't know. I've never been to a strip club. Okay. Never have been to a strip club. Why? What is for me there? I've got my own movies to look at. Honestly.
When you go, maybe we'll find out.
Yeah. Oh, just anthropology. That's it.
Just anthropology. Life is short. Life is short. And no shade to people who do go to strip clubs and the wonderful women and men who work there. It's just not for me. I got other things to do. Speaking of, here are my businesses and here are the next big things in Vegas. First of all, I have an idea for a mode of transportation called the Duo Rail, and it's a train, and it just goes everywhere in the city that you need it to. What do you think?
Oh, wow. That's hot.
Just drops you off at the front door.
Not literally, but it will go to the airport. It'll go to Mandalay Bay. There's a stop in Summerlin. Basically, it's like a train, and there are different routes that are different colors. It's got two rails, and it goes all over the city. What do you think?
Brilliant.
Great.
I think it's innovative.
And it's going to cost like $2, but not for everybody. For some people, it'll be free. Can you imagine it? I know it's crazy. I do have some others, and I am going to credit you, Sonia Cho, because she has been furiously writing her business name ideas. One that really made me laugh in the change because she started with herbs and rye and she was like, it's going to be aromatics and buckwheat. And then I saw her delete buckwheat and change it to spelt, which really gave me a chuckle because spelt is a funnier word. Sonia Cho, you're absolutely right.
Did she spelt it right?
Spelt is like a deep vegan cut.
Aromatics and spelt. But I do think my favorite will be an homage to Esther's Kitchen. It's going to be called Hester's Kitchen. It's a dour Puritan-themed restaurant downtown. And Sonia also felt she had to specify a la the Scarlet Letter, as if we wouldn't get it.
Which, as soon as Hester Prynne comes
up. Which also made me laugh.
Like Heart Attack Grill, where they have to wear these like hospital gowns, but at Hester's, you have to wear the letter of your sin.
I love it.
You got a number of jumpers to pick from.
Oh my God. And I'm into it because whoever starts it, I feel like it's going to be a good.
What would your letter be? Don't tell me what the word is, but what would your letter be for your sin?
Oh my God. Probably an H.
An H. Okay. Yeah. How about you, Andrew?
A Q, just because it's cryptic. Oh, but then I would be, no, I don't want to get involved with the Q. I would just do an ellipsis because I ain't done sinning.
Mine would be an ampersand then.
Oh, I like it.
God. Oh my God. Oh yeah. .. an ampersand. Great. All right. That's it. We're done here. Goodbye. It was nice having you both. Thank you for everything.
Always. Always a great time.
Bye, Sarah. Bye, Andrew.
That's all for today here on CityCast Las Vegas. Our executive producer is Sonia Cho Swanson. Our producer is Leila Mohammed. Our newsletter editor is Rob Catchell-Reese. And our hosts are David Figler and me, Sarah Lohman. Music is by OG Moose, Epidemic Sound, and all the kimonos. We record this show on the traditional homelands of the Nawuvi, the Southern Paiute people. And if you enjoyed this show, why not tell a friend? You can rate our show or leave us a review anywhere you get your podcasts, and you should subscribe to our morning newsletter. We'll be back Monday morning with more news from around the city. Take care.